We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. This gentleman's covering the Browns for the Beacon Journal. You can read all of his work in the Beacon or at Ohio.com. He's Mr. Chris Easterling. Hello, Chris.
Hey, fellas. How you doing this morning?
Hey. We are well. How about you?
I can't complain. Nobody listens anyway, so I'll keep it to myself.
Yes. We'll listen.
Join the club.
That's what we do for a living.
Oh, that's actually true. We listened to Terry Bradshaw last segment. He was on 103.7, The Buzz, in Little Rock, Arkansas.
The Buzz.
And made some comments about Kenny Pickett. And, Chris, you've read or heard those comments, correct?
Yeah, I saw I was actually reading them an hour or so ago before I headed out. Yeah, interesting. You know, it's certainly, you know, to hear a guy like Terry say that he thinks the Steelers kind of screwed up Kenny Pickett and didn't utilize Kenny the right way, and that he thinks Kenny's he still believes in Kenny Pickett as a quarterback, is certainly interesting. And, you know, I think there's a kernel of truth in what Terry said. Nobody liked the Matt Canada offense in Pittsburgh. You know, we were there that Monday night when Kenny's second year starting. And the fans, despite the fact that the Steelers were winning the game, were chanting to fire Matt Canada. So, you know, there is some truth to what he's saying, that, you know, get Kenny behind a good offensive line, get Kenny in a system that isn't so reductive as the Steelers' offense really has been over the last several years since Big Ben retired. And, you know, maybe there is. And I think that's the roll of the dice that the Browns are trying to take when they traded for Kenny from in March.
I just said this to Jeff. Look, any one of these four quarterbacks could be cut before the season starts. And that same person that we're talking about could be cut could also be the starting quarterback.
Sleep well.
Am I off base on that? Or do you think that is anybody rock solid out of this group of four?
I would, if I had to say one person is rock solid, I might say it's Dylan Gabriel. Okay. Because he was the first one they drafted. You know, they did come back around to take Shador, but Dylan Gabriel was the first quarterback they took. So I think if I had to say one guy was rock solid to be on the roster, I would go with Dylan. But you're exactly right about, you know, the whole group is that it's going to be fascinating to just see how this all ultimately plays out, because I've never seen a quarterback competition like this, you know, in my entire life, to be perfectly honest.
If it's not Dylan Gabriel, would it be Kenny Pickett? Because they traded for Pickett, didn't give up a ton, but they could have brought in Flacco before Pickett, and they didn't.
I agree with that, Jeff. I do. I mean, you can put me in the camp of people who think that Kenny Pickett's going to get the first opportunity to start. Wouldn't be surprised if Kenny is the starter on September 7th against the Bengals, because, like you say, he was the first guy they had on the. Everybody else that came after Kenny Pickett, you know, it was Kenny and Deshaun basically on the roster, and then they went out and they signed Joe because I think they had put their eggs in. Hey, can we sign Russell Wilson? It'll be Russell and Kenny as sort of the 1-2. But when that fell through, I think then, you know, they had to pivot, and that's what led to Joe Flacco. And then obviously they were always going to take a quarterback. And I think Dylan Gabriel was in many ways the guy they were always going to eventually end up with.
When you think about that first round pick that they have next year, and the fact that they'll have their first round pick too. Why, how does that? Is that a parachute? When they first made that trade, did it maybe make you think they want a quarterback next year, or are we just praying that one of these four can stick to the dartboard?
No, I think there's absolutely a world where and I don't think it's a far fetched world where that's what those picks next year in the first round are about, is ultimately targeting the franchise quarterback, you know, finding whether, you know, pick your flavor, you know, I think it's way too early to truly zero in on one or two guys. But yeah, I definitely think that if I had to bet, my bet is that the franchise quarterback of the future, if this regime is going to get it, is going to come in next year's first round. It's not going to necessarily come with this group. Now, things can happen. Quarterbacks can develop. You know, who knows? Does Kenny in this offense, you know, does the roll of the dice on Kenny Pickett turn into, do they hit on that? Does Shador or Dillon, who knows? But my guess is that the quarterback of the future QB1 is probably in the 26th draft.
I just want to go back to quarterback for one second. When you look at these quarterbacks again, which one is the best fit with Kevin Stefanski?
It'd have to be Joe, wouldn't it?
I would think so, too. But, yeah, Jeff and I were talking about this before. Kevin has to cherish a guy that's going to take care of the football, and we know that Joe sometimes doesn't do that. We saw that in the playoff game.
Right. I mean, that's sort of, Joe's got that gunslinger mentality. You know, he's not afraid to, to throw it in the tight windows, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing for a quarterback. You want him taking chances. You don't want him always being captain check down, but if not Joe, I mean, who is it then? I mean,
yeah, that's quite, yeah. It's a tough question, isn't it?
Yeah, because the offense Kenny Pickett played in Pittsburgh, like we've talked before. I mean, it's not necessarily like the Stefanski offense. It's a lot. I mean, there's some similarities, with the running, the emphasis on the running game and everything. But still, I just think it's a more quarterback-friendly offense than what he played in Pittsburgh. So maybe that's, again, kind of going circling this back to the start, maybe that's what unlocks whatever potential is in Kenny Pickett, is getting in a more quarterback-friendly offense.
There's one thing that's stuck out to me, guys. And Andy, it follows up your question. And Chris Easterling joining us from the BeaconJournalOhio.com. It's the interceptions and the lack thereof from Dillon Gabriel. And this is a guy, and Chris, who was on the college level, but he threw over 2,100 passes in his 6 years of college and only 32 interceptions. I mean, that guy took care of the ball in college. And that to me, is one of the reasons that I thought this guy could be a Kevin Stefanski type of quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things I remember. I think I even asked. I know I did. I asked Kevin on draft night after they took. You look at the numbers. You talk about 30. Because Tommy Rees and Kevin Stefanski both, and Andrew Berry, all three have talked about decision making. What is the number one trait they look for in a quarterback? And it's decision making. And you look at those numbers. It's over a long, big period. A lot of pass attempts. But he's taking care of the football. In a lot of ways, it's the same thing with Shador. Shador is, accuracy and, not throwing interceptions and that sort of thing. So, I think it's something that they obviously are targeting, they obviously want, but it's that taking that next step. Can he do it with, going into the NFL where the game is different, where he'll probably be asked to do some different things than he did in any of his three college stops. So, I mean, it's just, can he acclimate to it? And if he can, it's a trait that definitely should help him. It should help him as he makes that transition.
Chris, great to have you with us as always. Appreciate your time, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. Meredith is behind the glass. She's not taking your phone calls, but Matt Crawley is. Coming up at 1 o'clock, get ready. The big trio, Kevin Stefanski, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett. We're expecting to hear from all three of those gentlemen, and you'll hear it right here on 92.3 The Fan. And before we went to break, I mentioned Dillon Gabriel.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of Shador Sanders talk, and he's clearly very intriguing. I think that Dillon Gabriel is the dark horse here in every which way. But before I get into why, we've got to follow something here.
In accordance with the Radio Act of 1927, equal time for Dillon Gabriel.
Yeah, we've had way too much Shador talk, so we have to do this. 3 years at Central Florida, for Dylan Gabriel, the third year he was injured and played in only three games. Then he entered the transfer portal. He actually committed to UCLA to play for Chip Kelly. But the day before his first online class in January of 2022, he got a call from former UCF Central Florida offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby, who's now at Mississippi State, who was at Oklahoma, telling him that Caleb Williams was transferring to USC. So Dylan Gabriel had never visited Oklahoma, had never met the head coach, Brent Venables, and decided to go to Oklahoma. He left the idea of going to UCLA the day before his first online class and went to Oklahoma sight unseen.
Where would you have gone?
Probably Oklahoma, because my former offensive coordinator was there.
Oh, you're putting it in that perspective. I just say if I had to choose, I'd go to UCLA. That's just me, though. Westwood's fun.
I'm not a big LA fan. So there's some great Dylan Gabriel things for you.
Too many distractions, though, in LA.
Why do I think Dylan is the overall dark horse here? It's because of not just his productivity in college, where he's, number one, tied with Case Keenum for passing touchdowns in a college career, and he's number one or two in the yardage. Those things happen. And the guys he's up there with were guys who were products of big passing offenses in college and might not have had a whole lot of success in the pros. The touchdown list, Case Keenum, Kellen Moore, now the head coach of the Saints, Graham Harrell, Sam Hartman, Colt Brennan. You know, so names that don't light you up for the NFL. But Dylan Gabriel really took care of the football and was really productive in college. And that makes me think that he wasn't just taken in the third round by accident. You know what I mean? That they really liked him. They liked a guy who threw for over 3,100 yards every year he played full year in college, and he played five of them, and threw at least 25 touchdowns every year, and was in the 30s in three of his years, and barely threw interceptions. His interception totals in the years that he played a full year, 7, 4, 6, 6, 6. I mean, he protected the ball. Now, he's driving a big-time sports car. Right? He's at Oklahoma, then he's at Oregon.
Right.
He's playing for really good teams. But those numbers make me think that they sought him out thinking, wonder if we can get past 5'11", his height. And if we can get past 5'11", and this kid can do some of what he did in college at the pro level, maybe we become one of those rare teams that finds a really good quarterback after the top half of the first round.
Yeah. Does this mean anything? I love playing. You love this game. I'll give this to you. So at the Senior Bowl, you know, he set a record for velocity. 74.9 miles per hour. Does that mean anything?
If I recall correctly, other than I think it was Brett Favre, the biggest velocity at the scouting combine of all time, Dorian Thompson Robinson.
Yeah.
So I'll say it doesn't necessarily mean anything except for one thing. Dylan Gabriel has the productivity to go along with a pretty strong arm.
But everyone wants to rip his height.
Well, and Andy, for obvious reasons. I mean, there are not a whole lot of 5'11" quarterbacks who have thrived in the NFL. You know it, I know it. The Browns know it.
He's intriguing. It's really intriguing. I still sit here and ponder, what if Sanders was drafted before Gabriel? And then what would the situation look like?
Well, I think it would be Sanders. I mean, the draft position is something you don't ignore. I mean, there's a reason that the Browns took Dylan Gabriel before they took Shedeur Sanders.
They liked him more. Yeah, but it sounds like the Browns have gone out of their way to make you think that that doesn't matter, that whoever the best quarterback for the job is going to win the job.
Well, sure. Now, But they ran the risk of not getting Shedeur Sanders in here for multiple rounds, Andy. I mean, it's clear they prefer Dillon Gabriel.
I don't see a world, though, where the Browns don't give Sanders some opportunity.
Without question, you're right.
To lead this team this year.
Yeah. Sure, because he's here now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can't ignore the draft position on that. Chris said that you really like the running back position. Do you like the running back position?
Yeah, I like Quinshon Judkins. I was happy.
You watched more of him at Ohio State than I did.
Yeah, he's
doing stuff with the Buckeyes.
Well, he's a bullet coming out of the gun, and he's strong, and he can get through the line. But he did that in college. I want to see what that looks like in the pros. Sometimes that transition that what you see in college doesn't translate to what we're watching in the pros. So Judkins has the opportunity to do that. Dillon Sampson's fantastic. You know, I think. Ohio State fans got cheated because he got hurt for the playoff game. But I'd like to I should say Browns fans maybe got cheated if they wanted to have some more evaluation on Dillon Sampson. But I think we're in a position where one of these guys is going to stand out, and maybe we see who the next Nick Chubb is. I'm still bummed Nick's not here. And I understand very much gun-shy about, you know, the opportunity he may get somewhere down the road. Someone's going to give him a chance.
I don't think he's coming back here. The Browns have plenty of running backs.
No, I agree with that. I just think he could make some team very happy if they give him the opportunity to be the back that he once was, if he can be the back that he once was. I don't question.
And I hope he can. You hope he can.
Yeah, I don't question his heart. I don't question his strength. I don't question
anything but his knee.
Yeah, but his ability to make that quick step, I think, is the first thing he's got to prove to NFL teams. That he can do that, because in a year of rehabilitation for him last year, he did not have that giddy up. He was missing it. And I think we all knew it, but I think Browns fans are willing to have the patience to see what he would look like this season.
Sure.
To see if he would be able to do that after the recovery. It's still a gruesome injury. I don't know. I wouldn't bet against him.
There's no position, I think, in the NFL where it's as harsh when it comes to, okay, it's time to move on, than at running back. And I remember a month or two ago, I put together something about leading rushers in NFL history, and it was out of the top 15 or 20, or I forget the exact number, but the percentage that spent their entire career with one team. And it was only two guys. It was Walter Payton and Barry Sanders. Everybody else ends up usually late in their career going and spending a year or two not being what they once were for another team. You know, LaDainian Tomlinson did that. Keep looking and looking and looking. Jim Brown obviously was with one team the whole time. But there just aren't very many of those guys. And with Nick's questionable knee, and I say questionable, Andy, because of the things you just said, it was clear last year that he was not quite himself. And his yards per carry, which was always above five, was not even at four. And it's clear that he wasn't there. And in a very cutthroat business, the Browns had decided to cut bait and move on from Nick Chubb. I get it. Between Sampson, Judkins, Ford, you've got three guys there. Pierre Strong is still on the team. You have four guys who are young, fresh legs, and they're going to have a pretty nice battle too. Because I would think Judkins is the number one running back, or is part of a Lions type of Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery split, where and they've had the success with this where other teams are now copying it, because why? Everybody copies things in the NFL. That you're going to have those two guys and maybe Jerome Ford in the mix, maybe three guys. You know, is it Judkins and Ford? Could be. You know, who knows exactly, but I think you're going to have multiple guys carrying the football for the Browns this year, much like you had, and maybe even more so than when we had Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You know, Kareem played a second running back, Andy, but he sure got a lot of touches here.
I wonder the value of a running back, as we do every I don't understand why the value of a running back isn't higher. When you think back, not last season, but two seasons ago, the average passing play percentage was around 61%. So probably meaning, and what that means is for every 100 plays, 61 are passing attempts and 39 are rush attempts. Okay. And the Browns were the last season threw the ball 65% of the time. So that was higher than any other team in the NFL. Cincinnati was second. But when you look at the number of receivers compared to the number of running backs, you know, what do you got? 6 wide receivers, 7 wide receivers, and you're probably only running 2 running backs a game most times, right?
Yeah.
And those running backs are also, you know, guys that you'll throw the ball to. I just, like, to me, I don't
they
understand.
Seem pretty valuable, don't they?
Yeah, I don't understand how running backs became expendable in the NFL. Who touches the ball more? Quarterback and probably the next guy would be your top running back. Your top running back's going to see the ball more than probably your best. What your best receivers maybe on an odd day
10.
Has 10 or more, maybe 12 receptions in a game or targets.
Well, let's say
and that running back's going to see the ball more than that. That's why I just
a really good wide receiver. Mind. Let's say 8 catches a game.
Yeah, with maybe 11 targets, 12
maybe. Where a running back is going to be handed the ball 15 times a game.
And sometimes those targets are just because they were in the vicinity of a pass that went haywire.
That's kind of true.
So why is that? Like, I don't get it.
You know why? I think it's this. I think the elite wide receivers, there's a big gap between the elite wide receivers and the okay wide receivers. And I don't know that gap is as big in running backs. I think there are a lot of really good running backs.
Is a little bit of this an indictment on offensive lines? Because you're saying
is it easier for an
offensive line to get to 2-1,000, 3-1,000 rather than trying to push forward and open up a hole for somebody?
I don't know. That's a good question. Mm. OTAs underway, 1 o'clock hour. Stefanski, Flacco, Pickett. You will hear them right here on 92.3 The Fan. Let's do our imitation of the NBA office of folks who have been on vacation, haven't watched the playoffs, and they're realizing right now that Oklahoma City and Indiana are each one game away from being your NBA finals. Ready? It's Baskin and Phelps on The Fan. That would be Andy Baskin. I would be Jeff Phelps. Welcome back to Baskin and Phelps. We've been talking a lot of Browns, and again, 1 o'clock hour, Kevin Stefanski, Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett. We'll be speaking. We will have those press conferences for you right here on 92.3 The Fan. The Oklahoma City Thunder with a win tonight in advance of the NBA Finals. Good for them. The Indiana Pacers with one more win coming up in Game 5 in New York, advance to the NBA Finals. Andy?
Jeff?
As a basketball nut,
yes,
I think it would be an awesome NBA Finals matchup. It would be wildly entertaining basketball. I think that the two teams are really good. I love the way they both play. I love the way they've both been put together. And I think the NBA would just think, oh, my God, Oklahoma City and Indiana. How did we do this? For more than the obvious reason. Give me the obvious reason.
The market size. If you think Cleveland is a small market, this would be the NBA's biggest nightmare as far as television markets.
They
could not ask for a worst case scenario than this. So just to put in perspective, Cleveland, according to stationindex.com, Cleveland is the 17th biggest television market in the United States, again, according to Station Index. And when we say Cleveland, we're talking about the greater metro area. So it's Cleveland, Akron, Canton, and all things in between. Okay, so
right.
Everyone gets
anybody that picks up Cleveland television stations.
So that's market 17.
That's
New York is number one, obviously. I mean, that's why they have, you know, 2 professional sports teams in every sport, or three, other than, you know, the NBA. Oh, that's not true. They have the NBA too, because you got Brooklyn that still counts too. So New York is numero uno, right? That's the creme de la creme. Like if the NBA wanted a matchup, their dream matchup is LA and New York every time. And every professional sports league just drools over the thought of that. So when you go down the list of teams that are left, there's only one other market that's bigger than Cleveland still in the playoffs.
New York.
Other than New York. Minneapolis. They're just slightly bigger than Cleveland. Market 15. It's Minneapolis and St. Paul together. So, of those final four teams that are left,
that leaves two.
Indy.
Each with a 3-1 lead in the series.
Yes. Indy is the 25th biggest television market in the country.
Oh.
And Oklahoma City is 45.
Okay. It's the Green Bay or Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And it's not the NFL.
No.
Where it doesn't really matter.
Now, I love it when the NBA or the Major League Baseball or the NFL has to eat it. Although the NFL doesn't matter. It does not matter.
No, it doesn't.
No.
No, the market size, because you're going to get big-time ratings nonetheless.
But is Green Bay even bigger than Menor or Parma? I don't even know if it is.
I think it's the size of Canton, isn't
it? Is it the size of Canton? I don't
know. Yeah, the actual city itself. I think that Canton might actually be bigger. There's one other reason, Andy, that and I want your thought on this one, because I'm not sure I buy it myself, but I think this is another reason why the NBA, and they'll never admit to this, because, you know, good for Oklahoma City, good for Indiana. You know, you built your team, you're winning. That's good for you. But it's this. Think of the superstars, the popular superstars in the NBA. Which one's on Indiana?
Halliburton's working his way in there.
He's working his way in there, but he's not there yet, is he?
Mm.
Which one's on Oklahoma City? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really good. And, you know,
that's how they're going to have to market.
And he's the MVP.
Yeah.
But he is anything but a household name. And
he's not really an easy name to say either.
Well, it doesn't help.
He needs to go to just Shea.
He's going to be like Cher and Liberace. And
yeah.
Just one.
Yeah. Giannis is really Giannis. Let's face it.
Right.
Well, people would just call him, rather call me Giannis.
The lack of overall star power in an Indiana-Oklahoma City finals just compounds the issue that the NBA might have here. And that said, from a basketball standpoint, to all that stuff.
Is Jalen Brunson a major star, or just the fact that he wears New York on the front of his shirt makes him a player?
I think that's it more than anything. Mm-hmm. I think Brunson is still underappreciated on a national level. But, man, is he good.
The ratings for this could be, but you know what? I don't care. Ratings are their problem.
Exactly.
And not mine. And when you sit in a city like Cleveland, I cherish the moment to see market 25 go up against market 45.
Absolutely.
I love it. And if they have low ratings, it's on them.
From a basketball standpoint, Andy, this could be a great series if those two teams advance. Really could. Brandon is in Painesville. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Brandon.
Hello, Baskin and Phelps. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Hey, this is not like any kind of great radio, I'm sure. No controversy. But I'm loving you guys, loving this topic, because seriously, what Oklahoma City, so what, 13 years, right? When's the last time Indiana was in the finals? Anyone know that?
I couldn't even tell you. Have they ever been?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, when's the last time we really talked about Indiana Pacers without Reggie Miller being at the forefront?
Without Reggie, I don't think you ever have.
So we're talking about something in sports that we don't see a lot, right? And I'm loving this topic because me personally, for this sport, for any sport, to see two teams that don't go, they're not powerhouses, they're not known to go. No one chose them. I can't even imagine the Las Vegas line on this two teams coming into the season. So, absolutely loving this. I'm loving that you guys are talking about it. I'm loving your show. I'm gonna shut up now, but I just wanted to weigh in. This is going to be awesome. I'm going to love this series all the way through. So, love you guys.
Thank you, Brandon.
From a basketball standpoint, this is... I mean, this is going to be great. Indiana,
it is pretty amazing to think about. Indiana has three championships, none in the NBA.
Back in the ABA days.
Yeah, it was 70, 72, and 73. So.
And they were led by Mel Daniels.
Oh, yeah.
George McGinnis.
Yeah, George McGinnis.
George ended up with Philly. George was a player, man. George was good. And Oklahoma City, the former Seattle Supersonics.
Yeah, does that that's
doesn't do
bit,
anything for anybody?
No, it's a little Ravens tier for me. I'll be honest with you.
Well, exactly.
So when I was out in the Northwest, we'd go over to Seattle every once in a while to catch a game. I mean, it wasn't exactly easy to get over to Seattle, but to go there and then to see them, you know, lose an NBA team. I hope that I hope that Oklahoma City getting to the finals helps Seattle speed this thing up to make sure that they've got a team. Because it's only right.
Pacers made it to the NBA Finals once, and it was in 2000. One time. They've never won an NBA championship. So am I pulling for them? I kind of am.
I am.
I going into the Cavs series against Indiana, Andy, I mentioned, I did pick the Cavs in that series. My gut kept telling me Indiana was going to win it. My head kept telling me, nope, the Cavs are too good. But my gut kept telling me Indiana, and I didn't go with them. And they look good. They've looked really good against the Knicks. They've knocked off the Knicks and the Bucks last year. This year they could knock off the Bucks, the Cavs, and the Knicks. I mean, they're not missing people, you know. They didn't play Boston, but they lost to Boston last year. But they've just done a really nice job, and they have a nice team with some really good players who play their role. And you kind of keep waiting, and I won't say for the bubble to burst on them because I don't think that's it. But when I watch Indiana, I keep thinking, all right, is your offense going to get stagnant? At some point, are you going to quit moving the basketball? And every team, you know, every team once in a while goes one-on-one, you know, or somebody dribbles a little bit and takes a shot. Indiana keeps moving the ball, and they keep getting open shots, and they pass up a good shot to get a great shot. And, man, I love watching that kind of basketball. I really do.
You go back and look at, I can't remember how many years it's been in a row, but every team to get to the East had to go through Milwaukee to get to the finals lately. Last couple of years, it's been that way. I found that interesting. And then if you go back and look at the way Indiana beat Milwaukee to get there and then did the same thing to the Cavs.
Yeah.
And now we're on the verge of doing the same thing to the Knicks. Our eyes should have been much bigger going into the playoffs. And you said it right away. You said the Pacers are a bad matchup for the Cavs, but I think it's actually bigger than that. They're a bad matchup for everybody.
And they have been. Johnny's in Cleveland. Hey, Johnny.
Johnny!
Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys? Isn't it refreshing that there's not like a controversy, you know, like where you get fans with football? Like, oh, the league made Mahomes, you know, the flags. Like, this is real basketball. We're actually, basketball fans are getting what we want.
Is that good for TV?
Johnny, I think you're absolutely right.
I love watching these guys move the ball, and the Pacers have been just spectacular.
But Johnny, you're a basketball fan.
Yeah.
You know, and for instance, LeBron has wagged the tail that's wagged the NBA dog for 20 years. And it's so easy for the NBA to market a LeBron team, market the Los Angeles Lakers, market the New York Knicks. And here you have two teams in smaller markets that just play great basketball. And Johnny, exactly. You might love it. I love it. My friend Jeff loves it. Jeff sent me a text. He says, Halliburton's a star. Well, yeah, we know that because we're basketball fans. But most people don't know who he is. Ant-Man's great. Well, of course he is. And Shea won the MVP. Great. We know who these guys are. The general public doesn't. And that makes it a tough sell for the NBA.
Exactly. And these teams, even the Knicks, like they remind me of, like, maybe, for example, our old the Indians run that we had. Like, nobody expected these teams to be where they are, and that's why it makes it more exciting. Like you said, like the Knicks, it doesn't seem like a New York team. Jalen Brunson's underappreciated. His buddy Josh Hart from Cut, like it's a fun, lovable team. No matter who wins this series, I'm happy as a basketball fan. Love you guys. Keep it up.
Thanks,
love
man.
Listening to you guys on the way to work.
Thank you, Johnny. We appreciate that. Yeah, see, that's the thing about the Knicks. I've liked the Knicks team, and you know, Menegan has screamed all year that Thibodeau plays the bejeebers out of his starters. Yeah, he does, and Dan's right about that. But I kind of like their group. I mean, OG Anunoby's really a nice player, great compliment. You got Hart back there who's scrappy at two guard with Brunson and Kat. And I like what they've done, and I think they're very good. And Bridges is terrific, and I just – could they come back in this series? Yeah, but I don't think they will. Indiana has just had too much going on. And that said, I think we've seen some things here during the postseason that if you're a Cavs fan, you might want to be concerned.
Just point of reference, I was trying to figure out cities that would be bigger than Green Bay. Green Bay has 106,000. If you combine Parma and Menor, you'd have a bigger city. in Green Bay.
Which would be really tough to do because geographically, they're not close.
Hey, man, if you don't think Brook Park is in Cuyahoga County, anything's possible now.
If you're a Cavs fan.
Secede. I can't wait till Brook Park secedes.
It's going to be Brook Park County.
That's fine with me.
By the way, it was great to have Ed Orcutt, the mayor of Brook Park, on the show with us yesterday.
It was good.
If you missed
really
that interview, good. You can go back and listen to it. Do it on the Odyssey app. Do it at 92.3thefan.com. The mayor was a fantastic representative of his city and just what they're trying to do with the stadium. So go listen to that. If you're a Cavs fan, Andy, and you won 64 games and you think that, you know, you're the big guys in the East, well, maybe New York is going to be good again next year.
Yeah.
Indiana going to be good again next year.
For sure.
Orlando should be improved. Milwaukee, let's see. Mm-hmm. Boston, what do they do with Jason Tatum out? I would think you might see a move out of Boston that might bring in somebody and makes you think, uh-oh. Because the Celtics, I mean, their window is still very open, even without Jason Tatum. Maybe he returns at the end of the year. Do the Cavs need to make a move? And do they need to make a move like some of the wacky stuff we're hearing about in trade rumors? We'll share some of those with you coming up on Baskin and Phelps.